Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Roberts, and as always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Roberts. And here on the Hump Day edition of the Yard, hope things are well with you. It's the morning here. We got rain coming this afternoon, but I got some riding to do this afternoon. I'm working, as you guys know, on a couple stories. Well, I guess just one big story now. We were able to get a comment from Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker yesterday through his communications director. Very grateful for their willingness to provide that statement to us. And we've spoken to multiple people around the state and around the Southeastern Conference to try to get some context to all of this. You know, that's, the Protect College Sports Act. In its current form, I do not expect it to pass, but I do think it will pass with some modifications. And some of those, of course, involve a handful of things, but mainly like capping media rights revenue for bigger conferences like the Big Ten or the SEC. Like if you're in the Sun Belt or you're in the Southland Conference, that's not an important issue for you because you're never going to reach the cap. Right, and there's also some issues in there that certain conferences shouldn't be able to expand or realign based on revenue. And you know, there is maybe some steps being taken to kind of narrow the gap a little bit. And I'm not going to get into the whole Democratic process when it comes to minority rights, majority rule, that kind of stuff. There's just a lot to this. It's a very complicated issue, but we're very grateful that Senator Wicker was willing to provide a statement. And again, it's up to you to determine how you want to interpret the statement. But at the end of the day, he did provide one to explain why he voted the way he did to his constituents. And no matter what you think of Senator Wicker, I think that speaks volumes that at least he was willing to provide that for us. But basically what it boils down to is this. He voted no, basically is the will of the constituency and in concert with the in-state institutions. Of course, Mississippi State and Ole Miss are the two most important ones. I know that hurts some feelings, but that's the reality of it. The Southeastern Conference is not aligned with the current proposed legislation. As a result, State and Ole Miss are not aligned with the proposed legislation. So Senator Wicker voted against it. And it passed anyway. It passed out of committee, the Commerce Committee, with a 19-9 vote. He was one of those nine dissenting votes. But there will be some compromise in this thing before it gets the actual votes, before it goes to a Senate vote and ultimately to the House and to the desk of the presidency. One of the things I have prided myself on when it comes to the show is we have been largely apolitical, but sometimes the world of college sports visits political theater and we have to address that. So yes, there will be a federal law passed. That is pretty much agreed upon. But the current bill feels like it was kind of rushed a little bit. And that's the thing I kind of pointed out in the piece, is that you would think if you're proposing legislation to protect college sports, that you'd have more insight from those who work in college sports. And they'll get there. They'll get there. But nevertheless, we get that off of our plate. And I got another big story working on. May write it this weekend, maybe next week. It just kind of depends on when we can get together. I have had some people that have been a little bit cagey with me for the better part of 2.5 weeks now. They have now agreed to do an interview on the record and provide some information that I think will be very helpful. And so we'll get that to you too. There's really only two interviews left. There's one in particular I don't know that I'm going to get, but I'm going to attempt to get, and we'll do it after we get all of our ducks in a row, because we need somebody with some boots on the ground, expertise and know-how to kind of give us maybe some contrast in the article. It's not just going to be an infomercial for other people. And it's part of, the advancements of technology in college baseball. Nobody wants college baseball to be a video game. And so the Rules Committee is meeting next month, And so we'd like to have this piece together to put out there and just kind of let you guys know some of the hot button issues that are out there that are being discussed. So that's where we are. You're always working on something. Like there's always something, right? You know, we just finished up with the official visitors from the weekend. I'm going to give you a quick rundown on some of that later in the show. Just kind of give you some ideas about some pending commitments, some guys that I expect to be in the class. But also, too, you know, we've got baseball portal stuff we're chasing. We do have a new baseball portal commitment. He has not gone public yet. I've already interviewed this individual. The story is ready and waiting, okay? It's just a matter of when he goes public. And that may happen during the course of this show. Who knows? But we are ready. It's not like a rumor or anything like that. We actually have quotes from the young man that is going to be joining our baseball program, which will bring us to 8. And so, again, we expected to sign between 10 and 12. It started out probably about 10. And then we've had a couple of guys that have gone in the portal that maybe we weren't expecting or maybe we were thinking would stay. And so you may see some adjustments there. But MLB Combine is going on right now, too. There's just a lot of things going on. But in the middle of all that, we're still trying to write big stories, too. It's not just the fast food journalism stuff that that keeps us occupied. We try to do things that matter, try to get information and answers for you. And that was one of the things when this thing popped up last week about the Protect College Sports Act. People were really upset at Roger Wicker. And so I feel like I've got an obligation to use our platform to get you guys some answers. So, again, we've got some color and some background on this thing now. And again, it is a good bill, but it's not a great bill. And there's got to be some adjustments made before this thing becomes a law. And really before it even comes up before a vote on the Senate floor. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors to this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We love them. And one of the main reasons we do is consistency. Right, I have some friends that, like, when they travel, they always want to eat at national chains. And that's just not me. Like, I like to eat local. But the thing that I love about Bulldog Burger Company is I get the consistency of a national operation, but I get maybe the uniqueness, you know, the authenticity, the genuine article of small business when I work with them. Yeah, right. So you got a small business giving you national level consistency. It's a super thing, man. It's great. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Find your own favorites on that menu. Again, I am kind of partial to the smash burgers right now. I think if you haven't tried them, you owe it to yourself to do so. And maybe if you're not feeling like a burger today and everybody else is, check out that BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging, but I'm from South Mississippi. We have to have ranch dressing on it, no matter how the chicken is prepared. 3 great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, we're going to begin our series of previewing Mississippi State football opponents. Yeah, baseball season's over. The NFL champion has been crowned in college baseball. So we're going to go ahead and change gears here. We've still got some baseball stuff we'll have to cover between now and middle of July. You know, we'll get probably finish at the portal class post-draft. And we'll have a lot of draft stuff we got to cover. And all of that kind of keeps us busy in the middle weeks of the summer. But it's time for us to start getting serious about football season. So we're going to kind of break down Louisiana Monroe today and kind of let you guys know kind of, you know, what to expect from Louisiana Monroe. Now, Mississippi State has played ULM 6 times. They haven't always been called ULM. You know, there used to be the big joke about, you know, the directional schools in Louisiana. Well, it's true. And ULM was Northeastern Louisiana. My wife's oldest sister, Sandy, and her husband, Chad, graduated from Northeastern, and Chad was friends with Stan Humphreys. Yeah, quarterback, Stan Humphreys. I think they were fraternity brothers, but they still see each other from time to time. Just to kind of throw that out there. But, yeah, the series began back in 1972, and State won 42-7. We had a tie with them in 73. In 89, we get them 28-14. And then the long loss in the series for the Bulldogs took place in 1995. They get us 34-32. In 96, we bounce back to get them 59-0. And then in 1997, the last meeting, the Bulldogs won 24-10. All six meetings have taken place in Starkville, as will this one. State with a 4-1-1 record all time against the school formerly known as Northeastern Louisiana. As the schools in Louisiana have looked to change their branding and kind of move away from the directional school moniker, Louisiana Monroe was granted that nomenclature around the same time that UL Lafayette got theirs. And then, of course, now UL has tried to change it to just Louisiana, which LSU is totally against. But anyway, that's just a little history about the state schools. And yes, there were, let me see, to kind of run it down for you here. So there's Southeastern Louisiana in Hammond. There was Southwest. It was USL, University of Southwestern Louisiana, in Lafayette. And again, now they're, you know, they've almost got the same identity crisis Ole Miss does. There was Northeastern, which is now Louisiana Monroe, and then there's Northwestern State, which is in Natchitoches, a place that we've lived, and they play for the Trophy of Chief Caddo, largest rivalry trophy in college football between Stephen F. Austin and Northwestern State. And, of course, Southeastern and Northwestern State are FCS schools, but ULM and ULL are Division I schools. So just a little bit, a little trivia there for you. But let's look here at the Warhawks. Of course, they changed their name years ago. They were called the Indians back before everybody got so dead gum sensitive. But you're kind of looking at these guys. Bryant Vinson is the coach there. He now enters his third season at the helm. In year one, they went 5-7 and 3-5 in the Sun Belt. Last year, took a step back at 3-9 and just won one conference game. And we'll get that in a second. But a cumulative record of 8-16. And you wonder how Coach Vincent got on the radar. Well, when Bill Clark retired at UAB, Vincent took over as the interim coach. And so ultimately, he has now earned his own gig. And you got to wonder, okay, well, you know, what happens this year if things don't go well? Back-to-back losing seasons. And Vincent was quoted earlier this summer, this last week, about how he believes things are being built the right way. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's got a long-term vision. But let's look at last year a little bit for them. And, you know, schools like that have to make good decisions in the portal. They do. They opened up last year with a win over St. Francis, 29-0. And then they traveled to Tuscaloosa, and they got beat 73-0. 73. You may have changed your name, but you still got whipped like a Louisiana directional school. All due respect, but it was not good. The Warhawks were just 9 first downs in the game. Yeah, not great. Total offense for the Warhawks against an Alabama defense, it was just kind of okay. 148 yards. Not great. They traveled to UTEP the next week. Or 2 weeks later, pardon me, after an open date, they travel to UTEP and they get the Miners, 31-25. So all of a sudden, you're 2-1, and then you open Sun Belt play with a win over Arkansas State, 28-16. Now you're thinking, hey, we're 3-1, right? And we got our check game, our rent-a-win for Alabama, out of the way, but we've won everything else. Hey, last year, the year before, we went 5-7. We're 3-1 now with all these conference games to play, and we've got an FCS game coming up, and so perhaps maybe we can become bowl eligible. Wouldn't that be something? Well, no, it's not what happened. No, not indeed at all. They traveled to Northwestern, the Wildcats, another rent-a-win, get beat 42-7. To be expected. But again, you get into Sun Belt play against your contemporaries, maybe you got a chance here. They go to Coastal, get beat 23-8. They host Troy, lose 37-14. They go to Southern Miss, and you know Southern was kind of up and down at times last year, and they get beat 49-21. Old Dominion, they lose 31-6. They get beat by South Alabama in the annual blackout game there at UL Monroe, 26-14. They travel to Texas State, lose 31-14. And then in the rivalry game against the Raging Cajuns down in Lafayette, they lose 30-27. So while many of these games were competitive, they weren't all competitive. But man, they ended the year. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp.com. You guys know me well. You know that I'm very much an advocate for therapy. We've had a great partnership with BetterHelp for a long time now, but I don't know that you've gotten to see the reviews. We've had some Boneyard listeners that have reached out and said, Steve, I tried BetterHelp. We absolutely love it. You can see those reviews for yourself at BetterHelp.com/reviews. You can see it in real time, right? The reviews are updated daily with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how useful it's been to them. So visit BetterHelp.com/reviews. See for yourself. You'll see why. The average live therapy session rating is 4.9 out of 5 stars based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people is honest and earnest. If you've got something bothering you, if you need to sit down and talk with someone, visit BetterHelp.com and check it out today. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. On an 8-game losing streak. That's brutal, man. Again, after 4 games, you start thinking about what if. It's like, man, we got 8 games left. If we can, we don't even have to go 500. If we can find a way to get 3 more wins, we're bowl eligible. Wouldn't that be grand? It did not go that way at all. Absolutely brutal. So they'll open the season with us, and they believe that this year's schedule kind of gives them a better chance. And again, you know, when you're the directional school and you've got to go play these Power 4 teams, you know, to help finance your program, it's difficult to put together a home schedule on the non-conference side. It truly is. Because when you begin to think about it, right, you know, half of your conference games are going to be at home. The other half are going to be on the road. And so how do you put together a schedule where maybe you have as many home games as you do road games? Well, last year, they had 5 home games and 7 road games. This year, they're going to have 6-6. And that's a big deal. I mean, it is for the community, too. I mean, it really is. But they're going to open up first 2 on the road at Mississippi State, at UAB, and then after that, 6 of the last 10 will be at home. And maybe that helps them in their, you know, quest to be bowl eligible. And they get Southeastern in their home opener. Then they get FAU. They got to go to South Alabama. They get Louisiana Tech it's going to be one of those like ESPNU games. And I think I'd heard that they moved this game to Thursday. Maybe I'm wrong. Then they got to go to Troy. Southern Miss will visit them. They go to Arkansas State. They host ULL. They go to App State. And then they close it out with Marshall. And so, again, not saying I expect this team to make a bowl game. I don't. But I think it's one of those things, too, you look at and you begin to kind of ask yourself, too. It's like, how often are the Warhawks going to get 6 home games? Not very often. It's just kind of the economics of college football. You know, we're in a very unusual situation because of the fact we're in the Southeastern Conference, and you, there are some years that you could conceivably have 8 home games. Now, it's a rarity, right? But it's a possibility within our league. But what it was till we made the foolhardy decision to go to the 9 SEC game. We got gamed in that deal. My gosh, we got gamed in that deal. And I support what Greg Sankey does, but Greg got worked in that thing. Everybody's like, yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to expand the playoffs. And then we expand our schedule, and then they don't expand the playoffs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's what happened. So let's look at some numbers here, too, from Louisiana Monroe from last year. They scored right at 16.5 points a game and gave up 32. total scoring 199 points. They allowed 383, so nearly doubled up there. Just 95 first downs. That's not right. 211 first downs, 95 on the ground. So 211 first downs. They gave up 242. A lot of big plays gained from, obviously, for that. But on the ground, they did a pretty good job. Rushed for almost 2,000 yards as a team and fairly balanced offensively. They threw for 1925. Gave up a lot of passing yards, too, though. Total offense for them, averaging right at 323.5 a game, giving up right at 385. And it's going to be interesting, too, just to kind of see how things, you know, change roster-wise with them. They have a lot of transfers. And what's interesting, too, is going to be some names you know on these lists. You remember Gavin Howard, right? Yeah, Gavin Howard from Laurel? Yeah, well, he's at Louisiana Monroe. And that, excuse me, not from Laurel. From Holmes County Central. It's a young man that we offered and tried to get commit early, and then just wouldn't do it. Well, he lands at Louisiana Monroe. So that's a name that you're going to be familiar with. Adarius Green from Colin also signed with them. He is a 6'4", 275-pound offensive lineman. Marcellus Jackson out of Itawamba, a slot receiver, 5'8", 160. Jaden Tucker from Holmes County Central, wide receiver, also headed to Louisiana Monroe. Micah Hampton out of Hines Community College, 6'4", 300-pound defensive tackle. Expect to see him in the rotation. And then Mike Williams, cornerback from Colin. Jermaj Bell, wide receiver from Colin. Eddie Gavin, Jr., offensive lineman from East Central Community College. Jackson Parker, linebacker from Northeast Mississippi Community College. Ricky Banks, also from Northeast. And so you kind of get the message here. You know, they're heavily reliant on older players. And you know, so much of their signing class comes from the JUCO ranks. And then transfers, they added 20 last year, 20 transfers. And a lot of these are people kind of moving up and moving around. But you got a couple of interesting transfers, you know, from within their conference. And so, you know, we'll just kind of see how they all put this thing together. But, Taj Overton, a safety from Arkansas, makes the move there. And then Armani Rue, a cornerback from Michigan State, makes the move there. Abram Murray from Cal. Parker Fulgham, a wide receiver from Clemson. And he was basically a recruited walk-on. And then quarterback Austin Carlisle from Houston makes the move over there. And so, again, it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like as we get closer to our week one game against them. We'll kind of break some more down, kind of what we've learned about them since then. And one of the things interesting, too, that they do return the starting quarterback, Aiden Armenta. He is a, La Cueva High School in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Played 11 games last year. Had a quarterback rating of right at 122. 58% completion percentage, 12 touchdowns against 8 picks. But it's a new situation this year, too, offensively. They elected to go out and bring in a new offensive coordinator and essentially play caller. Bryant Vincent has called the offense the last couple of years, but Jesse Montalto is the new offensive coordinator, and he comes up from the junior college ranks. So this will be interesting as we see them. It's maybe not going to have all the same concepts that we saw last year on film against them, but could be a scenario where they, you know, have some different things. And of course, with 45 new players on the roster, and hey, we can't complain. We got a bunch of guys too, but they're going to have to gel. So it's not where you have a lot of veterans, of course, that can preach to you about concepts when you've got a brand new coordinator and a new play caller. So kind of getting them early, I don't think is going to be a factor. I think State should be able to out-talent them anyway. But the fact that you have a new quarterback with a new way of doing things, it's difficult for the spring just to kind of get guys settled, because you know, he's been there for a couple of years, and so you feel like you've got an idea of what you can expect from your teammates, but now you're asking them to do some different things. And the offensive line, I understand, it's also very much a work in progress. The running back room is also essentially being rebuilt. But looking, you know, Phil Steele recently picked a half dozen players from Louisiana Monroe to his preseason All Sun Belt teams. Got A.J. Vincent, an offensive tackle, as a first teamer. Noah Flemings, a linebacker, as a first teamer. And then Nick Trujillo, a second team wide receiver. Jabari Tiller, safety, and Abram Murray, kicker, to the third team. And they also had Don Chaney all the way down on the fourth team. I mean, Phil going really, really deep here to get a lot of people's you know, names in the paper, which is always interesting to me. And there's not four teams worth of players. I mean, I love Phil Steele, but there's just there's no need to go that deep, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, four players. But we talked a little bit about, you know, rebuilding this rushing attack. You know, it's interesting. You know, the one running back that gets mentioned, Don Chaney, what wasn't a part of this thing last year, right? So, you know, you're kind of banking that on potential. But it's going to be a different deal for sure with them. And again, new offensive coordinator, new play caller, relatively same offense with some different concepts, returning quarterback, offensive line in transition, and rebuilding a running back room. Could make for some early season challenges. And, of course, you know, one of the things that helps Louisiana Monroe, too, is, like, we're the only Power 4 team on their schedule. We talked about how last year they had to go out and have those rent-a-win games, you know, for the other teams, obviously. But that should help your bowl prospects when you don't have to play two or three Power 4 teams. We talked about Noah Flemings being a first-team defender. He led them in tackles last year with 80. And a junior college product, I guess that's not necessarily correct. He went to Northeast Early College High School. So forgive me. But, yeah, out of Austin, Texas, wears number 3, 6'4", 250 pounds. Also led the Warhawks with 11 tackles for loss last year. And was second on the team with 3.5 sacks. So an active guy, obviously. And everybody's got to have a leading tackler. And Jabari Tiller also was a guy that made second team. He is the second leading tackler with 46. A pretty big gap there between 1 and 2. So, you know, we'll see how things kind of play out there. But, you know, kind of is what it is, you know. Marcus Ross, remember him? Came to Mississippi State. Yeah, he's a Louisiana Monroe, too. So it'll be interesting. It will be, just because of the fact that we're ready to go play a game. We get this game at home, and I expect State to win this game handily. I don't know what we're going to learn in this ball game, other than the fact that maybe defensively we'll see some different concepts. But let's be honest, you're not going to go out there and show a bunch of you know, exotic stuff in week one. I mean, everybody knows about the 3-3-5, but the reality of it is that we'll be fairly vanilla in this game. And I'm just, you know, I'm ready to start ramping this thing up. Like, as soon as we get done with, you know, with baseball, and then prospect camps are over, official visits camp are over, really the only thing that kind of keeps us busy right now is the baseball portal and the draft. And the baseball portal news kind of comes intermittently. And then on top of that, you know, the draft is, you kind of hurry up and wait. And it's like 3 days of that. And then there's nothing. There's nothing, which is when I'll take vacation. But there's not much to deal with for a while. And then we start getting a little bit, you know, a little bit stir crazy around here. You know, because you start thinking, man, I need to get on the road. I want to see some things that happen. And those are the things that we, you know, kind of occupy ourselves with. And so I thought, hey, let's just go ahead and jump into this a little bit here. As you begin to kind of, you know, factor in, you know, what to expect, I think all of you guys are just like me. It's like, you know, State should absolutely wax Louisiana Monroe. All due respect to them and their efforts. They didn't schedule this game expecting to win, right? They scheduled this game because they needed a check. And so that's where we kind of come in. We're willing to write the check. But to be honest with you, I think I'd rather play, you know, teams like Louisiana Monroe than maybe even play Southeastern. I know at times you got to play those guys just to get some younger players some playing time, but at least these guys are Division One, and it's not that far a drive for them. You know, I've always said for years that it makes a lot of sense for us to play those non-conference games from the state of Louisiana because it's easy for everybody, and it's a good draw for their fans too, and a chance to go play in an SEC stadium. And you know, you just see how things, you know, how the other half lives when you kind of work through all this stuff. And but like many of you, I'm just kind of ready to get going, you know. And I know baseball just ended, but I'm ready to see Mississippi State play a sporting event. And by the time that we get to August and get into fall camp, it's just going to feel just so incredibly exhaustive. I was looking up the line here, and it currently sits at State is favored by 28.5 in this. And so I expect State to cover that. I do. I think there's just a lot about this Mississippi State team from a talent standpoint that should put you significantly ahead of Louisiana Monroe. And ULM's defense has been pretty good in their league the last couple years. But, you know, this should be a game that we win handily. And, of course, we'll revisit this as we get to week one. Just want to kind of whet your appetite a little bit and kind of get you prepared for what you should expect from the Warhawks when they come to Davis-Wade Stadium. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. His number, in case you don't have it, is 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save that number on your phone. You got a lot of numbers in your phone you don't need. This one you just might, right? Save it as mortgage guy. You may forget the name. You won't forget the need. Blair, in his 25 years of expertise and know-how, can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. He knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance for approval. Maybe the dream of home ownership has eluded you, and it may not have been totally your fault. Maybe you just had the wrong loan originator. If you're not ready, Blair can put you on a path to get ready, whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo that you've so coveted all this time, he can make it become a reality. Again, that's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, Randy hits us up and says, hey, Steve, have you done Foreigner? Well, we have. Matter of fact, it was one of the first bands we did. However, I did a little research, courtesy of Al Gore's internet, and I said, you know what? I can make this thing work and make Randy happy where we can celebrate the music of Foreigner. We hadn't done this in a while. We're going to rank the albums. Now, they have 9 studio albums, but they do have a couple of greatest hits compilations that have newer singles on them. So I picked one of those, and we have 10. So we're going to celebrate the music of Foreigner. We'll give you a little some things kind of, you know, as we go with this. But we're going to start with that greatest hits compilation of 40, celebrating 40 years of Foreigner. It's all very interesting, the band Foreigner. Great band, obviously. I know you guys kind of enjoyed that, you know. As well you should, yeah. So there is a song that Lou Gramm actually sings on. That's the voice of Foreigner. And there have been a few. But Lou is the classic voice of Foreigner, the voice that we came to know and love. Through our teen years, we still celebrate today, even though, he, like everybody else, he's lost a step or two. But it's a track called Soul Doctor. It's been on a couple of these greatest hits compilations, but it's on 40. That's probably the definitive collection of Foreigner material. Number 9, off the album Can't Slow Down. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this one. That was the last studio album from Foreigner way back in 2009. And Kelly Hansen is the singer. Kelly Hansen, formerly of Hurricane. And Kelly was been with Foreigner for a long time, no longer with them, doing some other stuff. But also with Jeff Pilson of Dokken, Lynch Mob, and other projects too. Jeff's the bass player. And it's an interesting deal, right? Mark Ronson, of course, kind of super producer, was involved in this one too. First two tracks did pretty well, but we're going to do it a little bit differently. Like, we're not going to necessarily go with, you know, what everybody else says, right? We're going to go with a track called Too Late. Too Late. They had a couple of singles that charted, but When It Comes to Love is one of them. We're doing enough ballads, right? I want to rock, right? I want to rock. But Too Late, with Kelly Hansen on vocals and Jeff Pilson on bass. Number eight, kind of a return to form here. You know, there was another singer that we'll get to shortly. Mr. Moonlight was the last studio album to feature Lou Gramm. Leaves the band, comes back, leaves the band, comes back, records an album, you know. And Mr. Moonlight's the name of this album, and we're going to go with another rocking track. It leads the album. It's White Lie. White Lie. And there were a handful of singles. This was the initial single from the album. All I Need to Know is probably a song you know a little bit. It kind of made the rounds on the adult contemporary charts. But White Lie is number eight track today. The number seven, an album called Unusual Heat. And this also featured a different singer. It was kind of a one-off deal with Johnny Edwards as the singer here. And also Dennis Elliott and Rick Willis, who'd been with them for a while. It's their last album together. But, you know, Johnny Edwards sang for Montrose for a while and with King Cobra. Some of you may be somewhat familiar with him. This album did not do quite as well as some of the others. But there are some shiny moments on here. But we're going to go with Low Down and Dirty is our track. Because, again, we want to rock. We want to rock. And that's a track that'll do it for you. Low Down and Dirty. All right, number six. And the rest of these are going to be the classic Foreigner lineup with Lou Gramm belting out the vocals. We're going to go with Inside Information. Great song here. Say You Will. And again, it's, you know, it's a guy pursuing a girl. You know, Be Mine Tonight. I love that track. Number five, and this was a huge album for them, but it also caused a huge rift within the band. It's Agent Provocateur. And this particular song, we've detailed this before, but I Want to Know What Love Is, makes the album. Mick Jones, co-founder of Foreigner, really wanted it on the album. Lou Gramm didn't want it on the album, but it became arguably the biggest hit ever for Foreigner. And so that led to this rift between the two of them. And then Lou, of course, leaves and puts together that Ready or Not album that had Midnight Blue on it. Yeah, so Lou was kind of doing his own thing. And sometimes a little separation is a good thing. But Agent Provocateur was a great, great album. And that came out in 84. And man, it kind of, honestly, it kind of changed a little bit for them. Like they had run off so many great albums. And then it was 3 years in between albums and then Agent Provocateur came out. And so it kind of transitioned Foreigner from being just kind of a rock radio band to a top 40 band. And I Want to Know What Love Is was the number one hit. You know, but that album, man, I mean, it's like, it's not just that track. Like, That Was Yesterday is great. Down on Love is another one that's great. Growing Up the Hard Way, great. So if you're looking for something you haven't listened to in a while, that's it. Now, number four. Now, some of you may have this album a little bit higher. I think there is some filler on this album. It went five times platinum, though. Craziness, right? And again, you just start stacking tracks here, right? I mean, you know, the debut album, multi-platinum, double vision, multi-platinum, head games, multi-platinum, then four, six times platinum. It's insanity, man. But head games, and we're going to go with the title track, Head Games. Love the guitar on that. It's phenomenal. The cover of this album created some controversy. And I think it's a little bit overblown. I mean, it's just art and theater, right? But it's Lisanne Falk was the model, and she also used to work at the same modeling agency that Brooke Shields did. She went on to some pretty big things, but the picture is her in basically erasing graffiti off a bathroom wall in a men's restroom, right? Like she's trying to protect her reputation or something. And so there were a lot of people that thought it was somewhat exploitive and it was a little bit over the top. And to be honest with you, for the late 70s, early 80s, this was incredibly risque. Now, if you wonder, very attractive girl in the front of this, right? Lisanne Falk. She actually went on to do some big movies. And she was in Less Than Zero, which is, I have told people that is probably the movie from the 80s that probably best personifies what it's like to be a drug addict. You know, the whole Julian plot. Of course, we love Jamie Gertz. She was also in Heathers. She was a Heather in Heather. She was in Say Anything, Leather Jacket, Suicide Kings. A lot of stuff. She takes a hiatus, raises a family, and then comes back. But, yeah, I mean, she's done a lot of stuff. She was on Prince of Bel-Air for a while. A lot of stuff, on the Material Girl episode for Werewolf as well. But anyway, little trivia about that one. But, man, I love the Head Games album, and I think you guys will too. That's one that's got Dirty White Boy Love on a Telephone too. But I don't like it as much as our top three, obviously. Now, this is where I think I may lose some of you, okay? Even though Double Vision is the best-selling album in the Foreigner catalog, I got it number three. And you're going to be like, Steve, really? Yes, yes. It's seven times platinum in the U.S., but I have it number three. I have an original pressing of this album, and I'm very proud to have that. I probably could find my sister Kim's original pressing of this album back at our parents' home. I'm sure I could find it. And it probably doesn't mean anything to Kim, but I'd like to have it. Even though I have an original pressing, I would like to have that one that we had. And when it was time to do chores around the house, Kim, and who I love, my older sister, and she was the head kid, right? And everybody loved her, and we still do. But Kim would like put on music and then everybody would have to go do chores. And more times than not, this is an album, even after it had kind of left popularity, it was popular in our household. And so I share that with you because there are some songs on here that I think maybe you don't appreciate that are great. But I do think there are some tracks on here that there's a little more filler on this one. For me. But we're going to go with Hot Blooded. And believe it or not, that song was written by Lou Gramm. Mick Jones, of course, is credited for that very atypical, non-conventional guitar solo that so many guitar players are like, dude, how in the world do you come up with this? It's incredible. But I also love Blue Morning, Blue Day. And that was a song that Kim liked too. She may not even remember it. But Love Has Taken Its Toll was great as well. And of course, Double Vision. I Have Waited So Long is great. There's just a lot of stuff on here that you like, but some of the other stuff I think is a little bit lacking. Number two for me is Four. And that's the album Four, which of course was their fourth album. And it's six times platinum in the U.S., but man, there was some incredible hits here. And it went platinum in like multiple countries. But Four is one of those albums you look at and you're like, dude, this thing was so good from start to finish. It really, really was. And you could make an argument that maybe it should be number one. I mean, I think it's almost sacrilege because you know what number one's going to be now. But man, Four is so good. It's incredible. So Nightlife is what opens it, and Nightlife is great. Foreigner still plays that. They open their set a lot of times with that. But our song today is going to be Jukebox Hero, which is the second song on the album. But there's also Waiting for a Girl Like You, there's Luann, and of course there's Urgent. Woman in Black is great. Girl on the Moon. There's so many ones. Like, any song on this album could have been a radio single. It was incredible. And Waiting for a Girl Like You, I had that on 45. I did. I had it on 45. Just had to have it, right? And those were a couple bucks a piece. I still got them somewhere back home. This is home, but back at my, you know, back where I grew up. But, man, there were so many great songs on this album. So Foreigners 4 is your number two. So, you know, that means the debut album, the self-titled album, Foreigner, is number one on my list. And I think it would be on most of your list, too, if we're being honest. And, again, I think there is a healthy debate that can be had between 4 and the self-titled album. And then, you know, Double Vision, we can kind of give an honorable mention there, too. And it's a great album, don't get me wrong. But we're going to go with Feels Like the First Time as your number one track. And, of course, there's Cold as Ice and there's Star Rider, even though that came back later. You know, Long, Long Way from Home, another great track. Fool for You Anyway. That's a deeper cut that probably didn't get enough appreciation. But, man, they re-released this several years ago and had some demo tracks on there that were like previously unreleased, which made it even cooler. But Randy, I hope that I satisfied your craving here, kind of going back and talking Foreigner. And it's one of those things too, like I think about, you know, growing up when I did, right? Many of you are much younger than me because I'm from the 1900s. I remember, I guess it was being at Mazzio's Pizza, I think, in Ridgewood. I think that's right. But you could go in there and they had a jukebox. And it's like all the latest stuff was on there. Like a lot of jukeboxes, you know, it got dated. No, not that one. And maybe on County Line Road, maybe I'm misremembering, but I think that's right. Mazzio's Pizza, they had a jukebox. And you could go in there and you could put on Journey. You could put on Foreigner. And, you know, you could put on, you know, whatever you wanted. But it just kind of felt like in that day and time, you know, rock radio, Boston bands like that, rock radio was just incredible. And Foreigner was a huge part of that. And so, Randy, I'm sure you grew up on these songs just like I did. I am still a Foreigner fan, even though we hadn't had new material in a long time. But and now, you know, with Mick retiring, there are no original members left and Foreigner. And there's a lot of people that think, well, a band shouldn't continue without any original members. And my feeling about that is, yeah, you lose a lot of the authenticity of the whole thing, right? You're just kind of a bunch of hired hands. But at the end of the day, I'm still glad that people are able to get out and go celebrate these great songs and just kind of get away from the world for a while and just be a kid for a couple of hours. You know, Lynyrd Skynyrd has done this forever and a day. Hadn't been many original members in that band forever, you know. And so I don't hold it against anybody. It's like, dude, we're going to go see Skynyrd. I have a tough time going, to be honest with you, just because of the fact that for me, it's, you know, it's a cover band. And but I don't hold any judgment over those that do go just to celebrate the great Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's just, you know, it's okay, right? You don't need my approval, right? You don't, I mean, that's just my opinion. But, and that's kind of how I feel about Foreigner too. But I tell you this, man, what a great catalog that we've had. And so many great things, you know, so many great things that we've been able to enjoy from the creative minds of, you know, Mick Jones and Lou Gramm and all the other guys in Foreigner. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out and let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend, Roy Samantig, who just got back from Hawaii. And he's going to get caught up on our list. But you can find him on X at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. You just go ahead and follow him. He's not going to post. He's not going to flood your feed with like pictures of his cat or his food or anything like that. And that's not going to happen, right? It's mainly just like Mississippi State stuff. And he doesn't tweet much, right? And you can find our great list on Spotify on that same handle, Dogmatic67, right? And be sure and just subscribe there too. And then our great list will just kind of auto-populate when you need them, right? That's what we're trying to do, right? Turn you on to new music and remind you of great music from days gone by. And thanks as always for your support of the Top 10 list. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got stuff we want, right? It's that simple. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to make a new mousetrap. If you got Mississippi State fans on your guest list or gift list, surround them with Mississippi State merch. Yeah. Whether it's apparel, gift ideas, housewarming, everything you need to detail out your fan cave, dress yourself, dress your family, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Visit them next time you're in Starkville. Very easy to get to. Just turn right there at the Trooper Station off 182. You'll be glad you did. Just kind of mosey around there. Obey the posted speed limit signs. We don't want you getting any trouble. Don't make any trouble for our troopers either. And mosey on around towards campus right there on the left just before you get to campus. There's Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, new legislation from the NCAA. And some of this was initially kind of covered in the Protect College Sports Act. And so, again, this is an evolving situation. But now they have okayed it. It's not official, but it will be. It was unanimously passed through the Division I cabinet yesterday that 5-for-5 eligibility is now here. Now, this is something that has been in the wind for a long time. You remember, it used to be 5 years to play 4. And then they modified the redshirt year in football to give you the chance to play in 4 games without burning your redshirt. That helped, obviously, with injuries and depth and things of that nature. You know, save some wear and tear on players. It was a good rule. And then they said you could play in the bowl game and it wouldn't count. Well, now they're just saying, you know what, you can play the whole year. We'll just go straight 5-for-5. It's all based on age and eligibility. So what does that mean for us, right? So it's not going to go into effect right away, because there's still one or two steps that have to be taken. Once that's done and we think it's going to be a rubber stamp deal, we're going to be good to go, okay? So it does apply for this coming academic year and athletic year. So it's all based on an age model, basically. There has never been a hard and fast age limit. So basically, student athletes will have up to 5 years of eligibility if they enroll in college no later than the academic year after their 19th birthday. So you could technically have players, I guess, that are 24 years old playing college sports. And there will be some waiver for injuries and things like that. This basically eliminates a lot of waivers. And there's a lot of waivers that have been like, we've had some where, you know, a guy didn't get a full year one year, didn't get a full year the next. And you say, well, he didn't get his 4 full years of eligibility to play. So that's going to eliminate a lot of that stuff, a lot of those waiver requests. But anybody that's done, right, if you were a senior during the 25-2026 athletic year, you no longer have any additional eligibility. So to kind of put that in perspective, you remember last year, Jerron Manning said, well, you know, I hope they get another year waiting for that 5-for-5. Well, he is not going to be grandfathered in. Bryce Chance, not going to have the opportunity. Now, of course, as soon as this policy came out, there's all this talk about we're going to file lawsuits for this. Anything, and that's one of the reasons why I think it's so important for the Protect College Sports Act to pass, is it gives the NCAA a limited antitrust exemption where they can kind of enforce their own rules. And how we got here is just so ridiculous. But anyway, so anybody that is done now, Like, if you exhausted your eligibility this athletic year, you're finished. Now, current student athletes with eligibility remaining after this academic year will have an additional year, right? So they have to make sure that they fit the criteria, which our people do. And so, kind of like as Sam Sklar has already written, guys, that would give Josh Hubbard the opportunity to have two more years. And wouldn't that be nice, right? So basically, anybody that enrolls 26-27, so if the previous rules are a greater benefit than the current rules, then both apply. Whatever is just best for the student athlete. And then anybody who enrolls after fall of 2027, it's all the age-based model. So there is a little bit of nuance with this, but essentially what we're going to have now is the full five for five. Now, it doesn't impact football as much as it does some other sports, because, you know, like in baseball, like if you play, your red shirt's burned, which again goes back to this whole inequality in sports. Well, now the rules are going to apply to everybody. Everybody. You know, it's not just for football. And I think that's one of the most important things, too. Now, one of the exceptions, and this is reading from the media release, the cabinet defined the exceptions that could delay or pause an individual's period of eligibility under the age-based rule, which include pregnancy, active duty military service, and official religious missions. That sounds like BYU. They have their missions they go to. These exceptions will only be available if the student athlete does not participate in organized competition for the duration of the exception. That makes perfect sense to me, right? And that's happened before women's basketball at Mississippi State. You know, we've had a player get pregnant and then elect to have the child. And so there had to be all these exceptions and things like that. Well, now basically they're going ahead and defining that as an exception that doesn't require any further, you know, waiver request or things of that nature. Now, also kind of finish this thing up. Under the age-based eligibility model, waivers will not be available, including clock extensions and waivers previously granted for hardships, seasons of competition, and delayed enrollment. For current student athletes with eligibility remaining under the previous rules, schools must submit any season of competition or eligibility clock extension waiver request based on circumstances that occurred during or before the 2025-26 academic year with all supporting documentation. So it's part of it. But in cases of extreme injury, they are also kind of affording some rules, some room to work. And so I don't know what you guys think about it. I think it's a great thing, especially on the football side. And obviously for baseball, but what I mean by that for the football side is, let's say for an example, you're a little bit banged up, right? And you've got an FCS game, or you have the opportunity, of course, to play some younger players in a game where you're way behind or way ahead, right? It just kind of saves wear and tear on the rest of your roster, because now you're going to have more players to work with and to deal with. And then, you know, let's just say for an example, in years past, you might actually lose a game because you have to play somebody that's less than 100%. You're like, you know, we've had multiple injuries at this position, and in order for us to put a young guy out there, we may have to burn a red shirt. Well, it kind of removes all that. So I think from a player safety standpoint, this makes great sense. But also, too, it gives players the ability to make a greater contribution earlier, get their feet wet, get on the field, help the team, and then prepare themselves for a bigger role in the future. But again, when I don't know all the rules about all the sports, but I know in baseball this is very significant. And so, you know, we mentioned, you know, Bryce Chance, you know, those guys that were graduating seniors that have already exhausted their 4 years of eligibility, currently not going to apply to them. But again, who knows what happens with all these lawsuits, right? But at some point, you got to move on and get your hair cut and get a real job, okay? That's how life works. College sports was not intended to be a career for the student athlete. It's kind of become that, but it's not expected, you know, to stay that way. So that's an important aspect of this thing too. But that's how it all plays out. And so, yes, there are some baseball players that have eligibility remaining that now also get the benefit of an extra leverage year, right? You think Kevin Malewski, right? You know, Kevin's got a year, so now he can come back and still have leverage in next year's draft. So that's a great thing for him. And so there's going to have to be some decisions made because everybody, you know, has roster limits. And so there'll be some guys, obviously, that'll be encouraged, you know, to kind of move on around the country in multiple sports. And so that's probably an unintended consequence of this. But, you know, that's just something to consider, too. If you have a player that has, you know, ridden your roster and not made a solid contribution, well, do you really want them hanging around the fifth year? You know, probably not. So I think there will be some veteran guys go into the NCAA transfer portal looking for playing time and also an opportunity to extend their college careers in multiple sports. So that's something that we don't know how that's going to impact roster limits. You know, the thing that I think about is like on the football side with high school players, right? We're already seeing less and less opportunities for high school recruits around the country. And as a result, junior college football, I think, is benefiting from that. There are some players out there that probably were fringe D1 talents that have gone to junior college to get a little seasoning and kind of improve their stock as players. But now with 5 years of eligibility, I think that problem is probably amplified a little bit, if you see it as a problem. When guys now can stay 5 years instead of four, then they're going to be more veteran guys riding the roster. And I think as a result, you're going to see college sports get older. And I think there are a lot more people that are going to be willing to come to school just because of the fact that, like on the baseball side of things, you know, it's 3 years removed from your senior year or your 21. For these guys that reclass early, you know, they have the opportunity now to go play a couple of years and have plenty of leverage to work with. And so I think in the end, it's going to prove to be a good thing all the way around. But I do think there, for every decision we make, there is somebody who is impeded upon. And I think in this situation here, at least until we kind of get caught up, we're probably maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, I think you're going to see even less high school players sign because you're going to have guys that have more eligibility and more experience. And so I think it makes the portal talent pool better in football and perhaps in really every other sport too, because, you know, you may have a player that's a little bit of a late bloomer and then suddenly, you know, his third or fourth year, he kind of finds it. Well, then they can play their way into, you know, a transfer portal opportunity at a bigger program. But every school and every coach and every sport is going to handle it a little bit differently. But again, this is one of those things that was proposed in the Protects College Sports Act. Well, now the NCAA is just kind of taking that on its own. So that's a provision that will really not be necessary. And again, this is an evolving process. Every bit of it is evolving. But this 5-for-5 thing is just one of those things a lot of people have talked about. Some people are against, but most are for. Within the decision-making process, it'll just tell you, it just makes it a lot easier. And so instead of having to worry about, like, tracking games, right, like, you know, the compliance people, you know, you have somebody go back and watch the participation chart, you don't have to worry so much about putting a kid in the game. You don't have to worry so much about who was on the dress list, right? Now, all of a sudden, you've got a need in-game, just go send a player out there because you don't have the fear of burning a redshirt year. And I think that's a pretty good thing too, right? So I think it just makes it easier for everybody to manage that aspect of it. I think that's, you know, one of those things that we talk about. There's some good things that happen with the NCAA and some bad things that happen. And a lot of people don't fully understand the role the NCAA has in this. You say, well, they're the governing body. Well, the NCAA is the member institutions. It's the schools. They're the ones that vote on this. They're the ones that put these committees together. They're the ones that represent it. It's like people, like, I see the stuff like with the D1 baseball baseball bracket. So people are like, hey, the NCAA did this. Well, technically that's true, but it's not like somebody's just sitting in an office counting beans in Indianapolis and saying, okay, here's your baseball bracket. You know, Scott Strickland, Mississippi State alum, is on the D1 baseball committee. So Scott Strickland is the SEC rep for that committee. And it's another group of ADs. And that's what they get together and they put the bracket together. They don't need some bureaucrat in Indianapolis in a suit to say, well, this is how it should go. So again, all of these committees, whether it be D1 baseball, football, or whatever, they're made up of representatives of the schools. Like Dr. Mark Keenum, you know, the head of the college football playoff committee, right? It's not some bureaucrat or some suit that's making these decisions, even though Dr. Keenum looks great in a suit. But you understand my point. And so it's the employees and administrators and coaches and athletic directors that serve at these member institutions that are the people making these decisions, you know. And of course, there's always some committee somewhere, obviously, made up of people that maybe don't understand the day-to-day, grind of working for an athletic department. And so that's when things kind of get interesting. But at the end of the day, it's the member institutions that kind of work in concert to put these rules together. And there's like a rules committee. And I've been in contact with the chair of the NCAA Baseball Rules Committee this week about this big project I'm working on. And, you know, we'll see how that things go with that. But, you know, guys, he's a coach. You know, he's a coach at Xavier. You know, he's not just some dude sitting around saying, hey, this is what should happen. He's a baseball coach. So he's out there every day. He's talking to coaches every day. He understands what it means to go run a team and fill out a lineup card and go try to coach a ball game. So I think it's important at times, not that I feel the need to defend the NCAA, but to provide some context here, that a lot of people just think that the NCAA is like the federal government. It's just not like that. It isn't. Now, they make decisions at times that doesn't always align with what we want to do, but I think it's important for us to kind of understand that we have representation within that. And you say we have representation in federal government, but let's be honest. It's a different level of accountability there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Absolutely a different scenario. Shouldn't be, but it is. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, and you certainly should, right? We stayed there. We had a great time. You will too. Very roomy and spacious and well-designed renovated place. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands off 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So if it's a ball game weekend, you can do your tailgating right there. You can. Got a full service kitchen to serve you, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 2, soon to be 3 baths. Only a couple neighbors out there, too. We don't want you throwing a rager, but it just trying to illustrate the peace and quiet you can have out there. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will pop up for you. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. One of the things that's not pictured is the expansive parking they have there. When you're getting a large group together, that's one of the concerns you have. Where's everybody going to park? No worries there. It is a worry-free environment. But also, too, some booking options will pop up, too. That's Airbnb, Vrbo. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Evolve with promo code BSR10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. What a great value that is. Open 365 days a year. It's not just limited to weekends. So you make plans today to get the people you love together under one roof and enjoy everything that is available to you at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, we had to stop show for a little bit because we had to interview a player. We talked about him yesterday over on the JeansPage.com message boards. Let you guys know that are subscribers that he was a name of interest. And now today he is a Mississippi State Bulldog. We're talking Berkeley Mabius, the catcher from Oregon. Originally from Bishop Gorman High School out there in Henderson, Nevada. That's a suburb of Vegas. He's a 6'4", 215-pounder. And, man, you talk about an impressive player. This is a great get for Mississippi State. Now, I'm going to frame this up for you as best I can. But last year as a freshman, and, of course, Bishop Gorman, that's a big school out in Vegas, right? But he hit 257, and that may not raise your eyebrow a little bit. Hit 257 as a freshman, hit a couple of home runs, 23 RBI, appeared in 41 games, had 30 starts. This past year, he made it a little bit of a jump, and maybe there's another jump available to him. But 286 was the batting average, and he started 46 of 55 games. Had 50 hits, 13 doubles, 8 home runs, 31 RBI. But I tell you, the number that's going to jump out to you guys, of 29 would-be base stealers, he threw out 13 of them. I mean, it's nearly 50%. I mean, it's a ridiculous number, right? You talk about adding competition, making your team better. Everybody benefits from competition. Anybody that wants to be guaranteed a job is not somebody that can play at a place like Mississippi State. You've got to always look to upgrade. Now, to kind of frame this thing up here, kind of on, you know, what it meant, Berkeley was the fifth highest hitter for average for Oregon this year. And that's a big part of it, right? Yeah, and that's a team that was one win away from Omaha. They went to the Super Regional at Austin and nearly pulled that thing off. But he hit 8 tanks, and they listen, this is a team that hit some balls. You would think, we talked about the other day, had a hitter from South Dakota. These guys at Oregon hit 105 jacks this year. And nobody really coaches offense quite like Wasikowski does. That was one of the things that kind of made him an interesting and intriguing candidate for us. In the event that things didn't go right with O'Connor, we could have contacted Waz. We didn't, despite some reports to the contrary. We didn't. But this is a guy that knows offense. And it's no surprise that Berkeley maybe has made a nice jump in year two. There is another baseball commitment that is coming. We already have the interview done. We've already got a story done. We're just waiting on the announcement. And so that's kind of where things sit for baseball recruiting. Now, just to kind of, again, let's take it more nationally. Mississippi State now the number two portal class in the country, according to 64 Analytics. That's a very significant deal. And 7 of those 8 are top 250 players. That's impressive, right? And the team that we trail is Arkansas. They have the number one portal class, but everybody else in college baseball is behind us. We're at number two. And we're nearly done. Nearly done. And again, you got 8 now. You have another position player coming that'll make 9. And we may take a couple more. We'll just kind of see how things play out. And we may just kind of wait and see what the draft does to us too. You know, that may impact some things. There's some guys, obviously, that want to sign, that went in the portal, that signed on with other schools. But if they get drafted, they are going to sign. And you wonder a little bit, too, how much does this 5-for-5 kind of play into? Well, there's some guys out there that say, you know what, like Tyler Pitzer is a good example, right? Tyler Pitzer was really good for us down the stretch. And he is forecasted among the top 500 players in Baseball America's pre-draft talent pool. If Pitzer gets a chance to sign for $150,000 this year, is he going to sign? Right? Because he's going to have another year of leverage. He's only played 3 seasons, so he could play a 4th and still have that year of leverage. And, that's just kind of how things are going to work. So that's where we are. That's what we're looking at. And we're in a good position right now. And that's just kind of how things are. And you know, again, State should be assured of having a top 10 class when it's all said and done. But you're in a position now where if you get the right combination of players, you could have the top portal class in the country. And how about that, right? And of course, we never know what our draft is going to look like. You know, we've got some very talented players. We've got one of the top recruiting classes in the country from the high school ranks. But we're going to have some guys get offered money. We're going to have some guys sign pro deals. We're going to have some guys that opt to come to school rather than sign a pro deal. But, you know, the latest projections are actually more favorable than they were last year when it came to our high school class. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with Rocco Maniscalco. You know, we'll see what happens with Denton Lord, Wilson Anderson, and some of those guys. You know, Martin Schiller. I mean, there's some guys that are really good players. But you know, even if you get half of those guys to school, you know, the ones that are projected to get drafted, that's a big deal. I mean, you look at what Jacob Parker has done. And I think that is as great a recruiting tool that Brian O'Connor could possibly have. Jacob Parker is a household name in the Southeastern Conference right now. Everybody in college baseball that keeps up knows who Jacob Parker is. And his profile as a prospect is only going to get bigger. And he was a huge prospect coming out of high school. But this is a guy that has potential to be a top 10 pick. Latest Baseball America picks, too, have Ace Reese at number 13. Yeah, so it looks like we'll update that graphic on the outfield wall. But, yeah, we're in a good position. Yeah, we are. And that's the thing, too, when you have what we have at Mississippi State from, you know, funding, fan support, facilities, all in the three Fs, right? When you have those things, teams, players are more likely to opt to come to college ball, especially now. Again, you're going to have a little more time to get a little more seasoning and also, too, to have some leverage. Like when you look at a guy like you know, Peter Merchant is a great example, right? Peter Merchant turned down money. Now, he ends up going in transfer portal, didn't play much at all this year. Well, you know, he's got to get on the field this year. He's got to get some at-bats and then give himself a chance to be trending in the right direction for year three, which would have been a draft year. Well, now that you got the 5-for-5, and of course his age will matter just a little bit. You know, those younger guys that maybe play sparingly won't feel this urgency as sophomores to have to go run and jump and get in the portal. That's another byproduct of this thing that I don't think people have considered. I think it helps the college game. Because one of the things that the portal has done and the reduction in roster squad sizes for baseball has done is it's kind of erased the developmental player. Now, everybody is developmental in some respects. But, you know, we've had some guys in the past. It's like, hey, really good high school players, maybe played at a small high school, maybe didn't play with the best summer league team. Well, you just couldn't afford to take that guy. You couldn't take him because he's going to be here and then not make the team in the fall and you're going to flush him out to junior college. Well, now you can be a little more patient. I mean, like you look at Henry Allen, right? Didn't have a great fall for us. We were already preparing for the squad size limit. You know, Topher Jones, same situation. If the 5-for-5 were in place, Topher Jones and Henry Allen are at Mississippi State in 2026. Right? And again, that's something that I don't know that's going to get talked about enough. You will have more time and patience with some of these guys. And that's the thing that I wonder about with this, you know, with the 5-for-5, how does that impact our squad size? Do we get a couple more spots to work with because guys are staying in school longer? That stuff has got to be fleshed out. All right, switching to the football recruiting side. Of course, Mississippi State did not get Mitchell Turner yesterday. I don't know that anybody in the Mississippi State media was projecting him to be a Bulldog, at least down the stretch. I know early on we thought that, you know, State would be in a good position. But, you know, Ole Miss got him yesterday. Ole Miss, interesting day, too. They see Ben Jarvis Shoemaker flip away from them and then flip him back. It's so funny within our group text. Somebody said, can you believe this? I said, well, maybe that's what his agent wants Ole Miss to believe. And then they pick up Antonio Berry today from Tupelo. So good run for Ole Miss, and we can't knock it. But we got to pick up some players too. And so there's a handful of guys too that I think you guys need to be somewhat aware of that are going to announce sooner rather than later. Rontre Carter being one of them, a safety out of Archbishop Shaw. That's the same high school that gave us Ryan Brown during the Dan Mullen era, went on to play for the Bengals for a while. I mean, we've got an NFL player out of there. Matter of fact, I saw Ryan Brown play in person against Leonard Fournette in high school. Went down there and covered that game and got pictures of Ryan and Leonard Fournette. It was great. It was, and they did a great job kind of boxing Fournette up for a while, but eventually got loose. It was a competitive game, and Archbishop Shaw just couldn't close it out. But, you know, that's where Carter comes from. It is a very good football school. They do a great job in preparing guys for the next level, and in the event that he comes to Mississippi State, I think we're going to be happy with that. I've already put in the crystal ball pick for defensive lineman Jaden Bayonne from Alexandria, Louisiana. That's going to be a July 1st thing. As we get closer, we'll talk more about that. Kennedy Green, KJ Green, former state commitment, announcing July 11th. I feel better about him today than I have maybe in the last 2 months. I think the visit was very good for he and his family, so that's something that we'll watch too. Elijah Cox is a guy we still haven't spoken with, but talking to some people close to him, it may boil down to another state and Ole Miss thing. Maybe. And I was told that he was leaning towards Ole Miss like earlier part of this process and then kind of just opened things back up a little bit. But it may be a state Ole Miss thing. You know, we'll see what happens. Elijah is a good player. He's a really, really good looking edge. He's a guy that can get it a seven technique. He could play to five if he needed to. He is a massive guy, almost 6'6", 230 pounds. Really, really good-looking player. And then LaMarcus Jones, we still haven't given up on that. And then I'm still curious to see what Ben Jarvis ends up doing when it's all said and done. He may stick with Ole Miss, but you know, kind of a wild thing there. But the reality of it is that you know, there's probably a half dozen guys that we expect to get between now and the middle of July. And, you know, we got to recruit better. But you know what, guys? It's kind of like a chicken and egg thing, right? I mean, it honestly is. It's, you know, you got to go get players, but you also have to go win games. And I think that's where Mississippi State is right now. You know, we went the early portion of the Jeff Lebby era, we went really portal heavy, saying we're going to have to flip the roster. We didn't see it as a rebuilding year. Well, once Blake Chapin went down, it absolutely was a rebuilding year. We went portal heavy again. We weren't quite as portal heavy as past time, but you know, we've got to get off this train because there's only so much money that you can work with. And there's a lot of people out there that act like we're absolutely broke and we're not. But the reality of it is there are some people within our conference that have more. And we're never going to be the sexy team in June. Just not going to happen. And remember this time last year, Braylon Womack didn't even visit us. And Mike and Nickerson had flipped to Missouri, and everybody was panicking. And then in the end, we closed with a little bit of a flurry. I suspect the same thing will happen here. And I do think there will be an adjustment to our class before the week is out. And that's just kind of the nature of things. But yeah, I mean, we're gonna pick up some more dudes, but we gotta win some more games. You gotta win games to keep them there, because trust me, there are coaches out there that are telling kids, well, you know, what if Coach Labby and them aren't there next year? Do you want to have to deal with that? Do you want to have to sweat this thing out? We're going to be here next year. Don't you want to go ahead and jump on board? And so there is some negative recruiting. There's nothing illegal about that, right? You may consider it unethical. And then people are like, well, you should just talk about your school. The reality of it is that just doesn't happen anymore, especially when you have an agent, right? It is the agent's responsibility to tell you the truth. It's like, hey, you can go here. Going to be staff stability there, or you can go here and you may be taking a bit of a risk. You never know what's going to happen. Then you bring in a new coach or a new position coach, and maybe you don't get along with that guy, or perhaps they change things schematically. All of that happens. And I think kids today are making more informed decisions, but there's some out there that are just chasing money. You know, we had some guys last year that, you know, they're agents, you know, for lack of a better term. Their street agents basically said, hey, so-and-so is offering us X number of dollars to commit. So we're going to take that, but you guys keep recruiting them. And so, I mean, there's no honor in that at all, right? And so we're just going to commit to get the down payment of the deposit, and then we're going to, you know, prolong and continue the recruiting process until December comes along, and then we get some more rev share money, right? And so there are a lot of people out there, and that's one of the things the Protect College Sports Act is aiming to prevent, are these people that are enriching themselves at the expense of these student athletes, and also kind of doing it in an unethical way. And so, you know, everybody's like, you know, panicking, you know, and listen, the reality of it is the melt doesn't help us. We melted last June too. It's true. And we ended up putting a pretty good class together when it's all said and done. Not as well as we'd hoped, but, you know, we closed really well last year. And I suspect that'll be the case this year too. We have to show some progress. And one of the things too, man, we got to find a way to, you know, win some SEC games, right? And we beat Arkansas last year, which broke the schneid. But we haven't won a home SEC game in a while. And we haven't won multiple SEC games in a couple of years. You know, we've got to find a way to get those things done, you know. And so we can't just continue to sell a promise. We have to be able to sell production. And that's where Jeff Levy finds himself. But, hey, do I think we're recruiting well? I think we're putting in a good effort. I just don't think maybe we're getting the results that you and I hope. But I think it's also important to understand, too, the way the calendar has changed so much, you know, there's just no point in getting up in arms with recruiting in June. I know the official visits just ended. And, again, we're going to be somewhere around 2021, probably around 20, here in a couple weeks. And you're only going to have a few spots left, but there's some names that are still on your recruiting radar. Like, again, I go back and give Jeff Levy a lot of credit for Braylon Womack. He personally recruited him and got him to Mississippi State. And so when you have 20 or so odd guys in there, instead of you having to go out there and keep up with 75 guys, you keep up with your commitments and you continue to chase some, you know, maybe some guys that if you need to move on from a guy, you can replace him with. But also, too, the funnel just gets a little bit smaller because in the beginning you got thousands of names and now you got a workable list. Now you're probably talking about 50 names that you got to keep up with. And so everybody can kind of tag team a little bit. So I just encourage you, just be patient and you start winning games. There are teams that will give you players that will give you another look. So, but again, I don't think we're ever going to be sexy in June. I don't think so. But all of a sudden you go out and you win, you know, 8-9 ball games, and all of a sudden, you know, some of these June commitments turn into spring commitments, and those guys elect not to take visits. And, you know, it's just winning helps everything. Simple as that. Winning helps everything. So incredibly important to understand. If you hadn't done so, visit dutynoblebook.com. You could sign copies of all my sports titles, and we are in the discussions about the next one. You know, I had some things earlier I was planning to do, and that's got to be pushed back a little bit. But, you know, you got to do things when they're ready. But, yeah, so you can get caught up and, you know, make sure you have all of the books. I have people come up and say, Steve, I got your book. I say, which one? They go, oh, I didn't know you wrote more than one. Yeah, I've written 7. So you can get Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, and The Dude, in addition to the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls, directly from the website, and all those copies are signed. If you need personalization, we can do that, but it takes a little longer, you know, because I don't live there, you know, so we have to kind of get together. But, yeah, certainly a great opportunity for you to add to your fan cave and your reading library and come float with us at True West Floats by Starkville. Guys, floating has changed my life, and I'm way overdue for a float. I can tell in the quality of my sleep. I can tell in my patience level, right? I just need to go float and just kind of relax, let my mind rest for a while, and you do too. Yeah. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you have about floating. She can get you on the schedule over the phone, or you can download the app, and you can schedule online. But we do encourage you, if it is your first float, to check your email, because there will be a waiver to fill out, and you need to be there about 30 minutes early so you can kind of go through the intake and onboarding process. That's an important aspect of all this stuff too. So you can't just show up. My appointment was at 10 and I got here at 10:05. If that happens, we may not be able to let you float that day because we're very, very busy. I think yesterday we had 20 on a Tuesday. And so come join us. And JeansPage.com, the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State sports in the history of the world, can be found right there. And you need to come be a part of that. And, of course, if you were a member at Jeans Page yesterday, you knew about Brickley maybe as being a prospect of interest. And now all of a sudden he's a Bulldog. So you need to know before all your friends that, hey, we're involved with this guy. You know, it looks like this guy here is going to be a big prospect for us, you know. So you want to be the insider among your friend group, and we want you to be the most well-informed Bulldog fans in the world. And again, hopefully in the next few days, maybe this weekend, we'll have everything we need to write this big article I've been working on for almost 3 weeks now. And but that's how it works sometimes, right? It's not all fast food journalism. Sometimes you got to do a lot of phone calls, and you got to do a lot of follow-up questions. And so we appreciate everybody that's a partner in that. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.